Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Thriving Minds podcast. Today, I'm joined by Danny Alachi. He is one of the co-founders with his wife of the Heads Up Alliance. We're so grateful to have you here, Danny, to learn all about what you've been doing and what we can learn from your experience in this space. So thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Selena. Thank you for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about your journey, Danny. How did you get to this place? What made you start the Heads Up Alliance? What's your story that we could all relate to?
Well, it's a very simple story, really, Selena. The reason I became involved or co-founded the Heads Up Alliance was simply because I'm a parent, and as a parent in the 21st century, we're all faced with these new challenges that involve smartphones and social media. And as soon as our children are almost out of babyhood, it becomes an issue that we're all having to face. And it's one of these issues that our previous generations haven't had to deal with, but we're navigating it for the first time. And so my wife and I, we have five children. And I remember when our youngest was born, iPads were the new thing, and we were hearing that, or perhaps we were only feeling it at that time, that if we didn't provide this new technology to our toddlers, and that's all they were at that point, that perhaps they'd be missing out. And, you know, there were all these wonderful apps that were supposed to do all these wonderful things with our children's learning. And we kind of got sucked into it. And then later on, as our children grew a little older, we got to that point, of course, where they wanted their first smartphone. And so this is, we're talking about 3 or 4 years ago now, when our eldest was in upper primary school, had the conversation that I'm sure is happening all around the country, if not around the entire world, where children are coming home and saying to their parents, okay, I think I'm ready for the smartphone. I'm the last one in the entire school or in the entire world that doesn't have one, and I need one now to stay connected with my friends. And so we were faced with that question, and we initially, after a bit of, we felt some misgivings about giving her a smartphone, but we thought, look, there's a spare one at home, and maybe it's not going to be all that bad. But it was, and very soon we felt like we had lost our daughter. So, with a bit of luck.
So do you mind explaining that for the people not listening? For people listening, because this is a common thread in private conversations that I have that no parent is willing to share with anyone else. If I could count the number of conversations where people are saying exactly what you're saying, and I say, please, can you come on the podcast? Please, can you go to the school? Please, can you tell other parents? And they immediately say no.
Oh, no, I'm more very happy to concede that we made a mistake. We gave her the smartphone, and it was almost overnight where it overtook many aspects of her life, or certainly a lot of the time that we would ordinarily have spent together as a family was suddenly being taken away from us, because she was hiding away in her room, chatting with friends or doing all the, you know, wonderful things that you can do on a shiny smartphone that seems a lot more attractive than perhaps reading a book or sitting down with mum and dad or helping with the cooking or whatever demands there are in a house or in family life. So it also encroached upon her sleeping. So we would occasionally check in, you know, late at night, as parents do, to make sure that their children are sleeping soundly. And on more than one occasion, we found her, you know, under the covers, perhaps texting friends or messaging friends. And so we quickly realized that this was going to lead us down a path of a conflict, and of course, but also lead her down a path of misery in the long run. And as I was mentioning a little earlier, we were very lucky in that this old secondhand iPhone happened to break down or malfunction within that short space of time that we had given it to her. And we used that as an opportunity to reassess whether we were going to purchase a replacement or whether we had seen enough to say, actually, we made a mistake. We're going to have to have another conversation about all of this and perhaps reach different conclusions. And that's what we ultimately did. And she hates me saying this. This is my daughter. But she spent quite a number of nights in tears over the fact that she wasn't getting her phone replaced.
Yes, well, this is what addiction looks like in the withdrawal phase. And this is what the research evidence is really clear now.
I don't know that she was addicted in the clinical sense. You know, from as a layperson, I certainly do use those terms, but perhaps a little loosely. You know, I consider myself addicted to my phone. Whether it's a, you know, a clinical addiction, I don't think so. I don't think most of us are clinically addicted.
But there is evidence we are clinically addicted because of the way it activates the reward punishment center of our amygdala. That study's just all these research papers are coming out demonstrating this from a brain specific point of view, and it's no one's fault. It's just how they're gaming devices, aren't they?
Well, they are effectively, aren't they? They're little poker machines in your pocket, really.
And they're just there for advertising and promotion. They're not there to help you live a good life.
No. I mean, they certainly come with advantages, and I certainly couldn't do without my smartphone, not in the very least for work, but for other, you know, for keeping in touch with family overseas and, you know, even within your own city. Certainly comes with advantages, but we need to be real here and recognize that they also come with a whole lot of downsides.
Yeah, and I think that's the point, isn't it? That in all of this stuff, and it's no one's fault. We're having these conversations. It's just where we are, as you said, 21st century, and all the benefits, as you mentioned, were touted like they need to have this, they need to have that because it is the 21st century, but the side effects are never promoted or told, or and then we have to catch up with all of the impact on our children's mental health because they're getting these things from babies, whereas we're adults, we didn't really get them till much older. Do you know what I mean? So our brain can handle it differently to a baby's brain. And I think that's the point of what you're trying to say in your organization, Heads Up Alliance, is why are we racing to do this to our children?
Absolutely. And however problematic and whatever downsides are attached to smartphones and social media as adults, I believe it's amplified for children. Even if you just look at the opportunity cost, that the fact that having a smartphone, if you're a child, you only get your childhood one time, and it should be the best times of your life, discovering the world and being fascinated by all the, you know, wonderful things that are out there in the big wide world that you're discovering for the first time. And if that period of life is spent on a device, then you've lost the opportunity to have that full childhood, and you're never going to get it back. You'll be an adult soon enough, and with the responsibilities of adulthood. And that's what we're trying to do now, is try to encourage parents to take a step back from all of this and say, hang on, how important is childhood for your children? And just because everybody else seemingly around you is following down a particular path, does it necessarily mean that you must also follow? Or is it okay to step back and say, well, maybe the path less traveled is the better way? And when we say the path less traveled, it was the path that was traveled, you know, by humans for thousands of years.
Oh, about 10 years ago, too.
Yeah, up until 2 minutes ago, it was the way childhood has been and the way humans have related to each other for millennia. And perhaps this is the experiment. In fact, I know this is the experiment. And we're trying to say to people, look, that's fine. You know, I mean, as adults, if we want to, you know, spend our days scrolling and filling our minds with unnecessary junk, that's one thing. But do we really want to be doing this to our children? And I'm hoping that most parents would agree that the answer is no. And what we're trying to do is offer them a pathway, some sort of example, I guess, not just by what we're doing, but what our community is doing and what other communities around Australia have done, which is to create local alliances of families who've all agreed that they're not going to give in to the pressure of handing their children a smartphone at the age of 10, and they're not going to allow their children to jump on TikTok at the age of 12 or 13 just because TikTok says it's okay at the age of 12 or 13. And for them to discover that when you do hold out in community, then that dreaded fear of missing out is reduced, if not eradicated. If you can find enough friends in your children's social circles to hold out together, then if everybody's missing out, no one's missing out. And in fact, it's not missing out at all. It's gaining childhood, it's gaining life, it's gaining books, it's gaining sport, it's gaining exercise. It's
friendships, it's proper friendships.
proper friendships, reclaiming your mental health. Then that's not even touching on the dangers of you know, predation, and exploitation that you get through a lot of these apps. So there's a vast array of reasons why it makes so much sense not to introduce our children to this world too early.
So can we talk about how do we start these local community groups in places that already don't have them? What are the steps that people can do? I assume this is how you... I can see these are the core principles and guidelines you've set up for Heads Up Alliance. But how do we make this into a network that extends across Australia?
Right. So let me just say from the outset, I'm not necessarily concerned about creating a national network, although it's really nice to know that as a country, as a nation, that we're all heading in the right direction. So ironically, through our Facebook page, we connect like-minded parents, and those parents tend to be from Australia who've taken the same approach as we have, which is to delay. We say that we hope to get a commitment from parents to delay smartphones and social media until the age of 14. It's in one sense a little bit arbitrary, but it's 2 years into high school, and we find that most children, by the time, if they've held out through primary school, almost all children are given smartphones by the time they start year seven, so at the age of 11, 12. So we're making it a little bit of a challenge at the age of 14. And
but can I just to fortify what you're saying there, the biggest target group for online, you know, Australia is a leading country for online child exploitation because our children we're a country with the most devices in the world and wealthy country. And so they're targeting boys between 10 and 17 years of age. And in 2024, it's beyond police control. And it's so many things. And this is what parents won't tell you about because it's too embarrassing. Madonna King just put out a new book laying out all the statistics. This is a very well-known fact. And so tech companies that set up a lot of these, the five big tech companies that were worth $7 trillion, all their children go to a special school in Costa Rica where they have no smartphones, devices, or social media until the age of grade 11 and 12.
Amazing.
in the school, nothing.
Isn't that amazing?
They're reading on textbooks. They're because they know you can't learn on devices, and also because they know what social media does to children's brain health.
Right. So, I mean, that's very telling, isn't it? If the children of the all of these big tech executives are going to schools where there's no devices and where they know the product that they've created isn't necessarily conducive to a good childhood. I mean, I don't know if you need to look much further than that.
And plus, for your evidence. And plus, you're not allowed to be on any of these things until you're at least 13. That's the rule that you're signing up to as well.
Selena, I know, and look, I'm sorry to interject here, but
no, that's okay.
That rule about not signing up to social media until the age of 13 has nothing whatsoever to do with a child's readiness to cope with social media. It's got everything to do with American privacy law. So,
absolutely.
The United States, you can't collect data unless a person is over the age of 13. And so that's the only reason they say that you shouldn't be signing up to TikTok or to Snapchat until you're 13 years of age. And that's become an international rule. And I think parents have mistaken that to think that, oh, okay, well, perhaps this means that over the age of 13, it's safe. So surely, you know, psychologists and whatnot have looked into it and they've deemed 13 to be the safe age. In fact, it's not. It's got nothing to do with safety whatsoever.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it because I think it should be delayed for, you know, till you're 16 or 17, like driving a car. I'm saying because how come we have five-year-olds on these apps?
Oh, well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If they're not allowed to have an account, do you know what I mean? Like, how is this happening?
Well, I don't think there's any, age verification going on. So it just takes the click of a button where you declare you're 13 and off you go.
Exactly.
So
that would be one thing Australian could do immediately to make a difference, is to have real age verification as mandatory.
Yeah, and I would argue real age verification and not necessarily for that age of 12 or 13, that it would be evidence-based. And in line with what is good for our children, not connected to what is the legal age for data collection.
And
so they're two very separate questions, aren't they?
Yeah, and I'm sure you knew about all the work happening in Finland, where they're banning any kind of device in schools up until, I think that originally it was something like, you know, 8-year-olds, but they're moving all the way up to teenagers now and bringing back textbooks.
No, I actually wasn't aware of what was happening in Finland. I'd heard that in Sweden, the education minister had made some very strong comments about the reason for their declining education standards, and she was laying the blame squarely at the feet of too much digitization. Without any evidence. And I know that in Sweden they've pulled back. It wouldn't surprise me if it's also now happening in Finland, as you say.
It's already happened. They've already done it in Finland with great results.
I mean, wonderful news for Finland.
Lucky for Finland.
Yeah, lucky for them.
But lucky for them.
I don't know, unfortunately, that I think we're still in the thralls of edutech, and for whatever reason, we've just gone headlong into this whole notion that we need to learn through devices, when every time we speak to neuroscientists and people who've studied the brain, they confirm what our gut tells us, and that is that nothing is better than learning through paper and pencil
and a teacher.
And tactile, and through a teacher, of course.
And a parent, of course. Parents,
and a parent. And anything that has to do with face-to-face connection,
yes,
anything that has to do with you holding things in your hands, and, you know, gone are the days where students used to, you know, dog-ear this page and put a post-it note on there and highlight this section. I mean, that's how we used to learn, and your intuition tells you that you learn well that way. And I don't know, I really feel sorry for the kids that are learning in 2024, because Everything is done through a screen. And I look at my children sometimes and I say, how on earth are you processing any of this stuff? We used to touch our textbooks and you know, put bookmarks here and post-it notes there and
I
fold
think
this page and take notes and scribble in the margins, and none of that is happening
and I think it's
anymore.
bearing out in our results. So our results are shocking, and even people aren't even bothering to go to school now or to uni even.
Yeah, and obviously that's partly to do with the disruption due to COVID in the last few years. But I mean, I read a shocking statistic in the Sydney Morning Herald only a few weeks ago, and we put it up on our page. The average child, average teenager today is 2 years behind the student, a student from the early 2000s. So in 2 decades, the average student today is so far behind what we were not that long ago. It's actually frightening. And if we continue on that trajectory, where do we end up? Goodness
Well, I
knows.
guess that's the aim, isn't it? Just dumb everyone down.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it's certainly something that needs to be looked into, right? I mean, we talk a lot about evidence-based. And I'm going to take you to the issue of smartphones in schools and why children
Yes.
brought smartphones in schools.
Yes,
And
please.
We were involved through a lot of luck, because our local member was, or it still is, Chris Minns, who at the time was the opposition leader, is now the Premier of New South Wales. So we were able to work with him to introduce phone bans in New South Wales public schools. And we've done a little bit of work around in Queensland in terms of organising petitions and whatnot. And the good news is that phones have now been banned across every public school in every state in Australia.
Absolutely.
And
Shocking.
a lot of the opposition.
I'm surprised that I know why that's happened to outside. You know, it's a liability issue, isn't it? Because everything is happening on the smartphones and on the online exploitation area too.
Well, I mean, it may have been that. I know. I feel that Chris Minns had did it for all the good reasons. He fully understood, as a parent himself, that these devices were very distracting. And so, of course, how do you possibly learn in a classroom if you've got this shiny thing dinging and pinging every few minutes? And the disruption that it was causing in the playground in terms of children just not interacting anymore, it was just such a no-brainer issue. And the thing that really shocked myself and other parents in the Heads Up Alliance was the number of scientists, psychologists who opposed the notion that we should take smartphones out of the schools. And one of the reasons they gave was that there was no scientific evidence that taking them out of the school would improve matters. And then my question, and I'm not a scientist, but my question was, well, hang on a second, if we're talking science, isn't the onus on you who wish to have this new device in the school environment to produce the evidence that it's actually a net positive for the school environment? Instead, we were inverting the whole question, and it became the onus on us who wanted to try to take it back out of the environment to show the scientific evidence. Well, my answer was no. Until you can provide the evidence that it's a good thing, we should go back to the status, to what was the status quo. And then when you've finally given us the scientific evidence, which will never come, by the way, but if it ever did eventually come round to show that having smartphones in schools distracting students in the classroom and in the playground is actually a good thing for them, well, that's when you can say we're following the science. And now the same thing is happening, I think, with devices in high schools and BYOD and all of that. Those of us who think perhaps we need to take a step back are being told, well, where's your scientific evidence? Where's the scientific base for that stance? And really the question should be, but hang on, no, where's the scientific base for having introduced all of this technology into our schools? It seems that the questions are being inverted, and the onus of proof is being put upon the wrong party here.
Yes, and can we talk? I think this is a good place just to spend a little bit of time talking about conflicts of interest in terms of the amount of money being made in technology and developing apps across all fields for children. Do you know what I mean? Like we have mental health apps, there's a lot of things that have been built. And then if we have no ability for children to use these things, then where's that business model going to go?
Right. I mean, that's the story is as old as time itself. The people's desire to make money, but then those same people giving advice as to whether or not their products are going to be helpful. Obviously, we need to have more independent bodies advising government, advising parents, advising the society. But if we're going to listen to the same people who are making the money out of these products, then of course they're going to be pushing us in the one direction. And
So, what do you think is a potential solution, Danny, that as a society, I mean, I guess the shocking thing that came to me, which is why I wrote my book in such a hurry called Being Seen, was because I got the realization very quickly from experts in the field that there are only very few parents safeguarding their children. Because outside the schools, which 80% of parents are happy to ban smartphones in schools, but they're not happy to hear that the most of the exploitation is actually happening at home.
I would have to agree with you there, Selena. Banning phones in schools was
It's a
only a
great
start.
step. It's a
It was a
step.
great it's a great step. And we just think, look, at least there's a 6 hour block in a child's day where they can be present with their teachers, present with their peers, and just live a human existence for 6 hours without being tied to a device. But I totally agree with you. I mean, what happens when you go home? A lot of the issues that we were trying to solve by removing smartphones from the school day, are then just following children into their bedrooms and into their homes. And of course, that's a huge issue too. What the solution is, I think that there's a few things that we can do. One is experts in neuroscience, such as yourself and Dr. Mark Williams, who I know you interviewed yesterday or a couple of days ago. I think your voice needs to be amplified over and above some of the other academics who take a little more lukewarm line on these issues.
Well,
I don't know.
we didn't, Danny, we didn't really have a lot of the scientific research takes 5 years more or less to by the time you get ethics and do the studies and then the publication. So it's a 5-year delay, but the delay is starting to close the gap because the number of papers that are, this is like smoking was in the 80s. The smoking connection to lung cancer took some time to build the scientific evidence, and it's up against a massive backlash because people made a huge amount of money out of cigarettes for a really long time. And so they have so much marketing power to take down these voices, which are really small, like myself or other and you, and why we need to work out how to join together to amplify our voice because we're up against something that's massive. But the research papers are coming, and the number I've seen already, and Mark has shared with me many just recently. We're going to build, we'll build the hub of the scientific evidence. So, I mean, Mark is happy to come out and say, and he's even more of an expert in cognitive neuroscience on face-to-face recognition. He's come out and said social media causes children's mental illness.
And that's a huge statement for him to make.
And so
Because
I've asked him to send me the papers. So, for example, one recent study in 15 to 16-year-old adolescents looking at the 14 different activities, whether it's texting, messaging, it's not just the standard things, it's not the standard social media platforms, it's all of the different things. There's 14 different activities. The checking behavior in those activities, they followed them for 2 years. They got the children in with zero ADHD symptoms. This is published in a medical, high-profile medical journal called JAMA. They brought in the 15, 16-year-olds, measured their checking behaviors over 2 years, and demonstrated an increase in ADHD symptoms 6, 12, and 24 months later.
Right. And see, none of this surprises parents who are at the coalface, who, I mean, as you say, science takes time, and there are protocols that we need to follow, and so on and so forth. But in real time, we're seeing any parent who gives unfettered access to smartphones and social media would have to be seeing changes in their child's moods. I mean, we saw it, as I said, at the beginning of this podcast.
What was the length of time that your daughter
it was only weeks. It was quite a few years ago now, but I think she may have had it at the most for a couple of months.
Amazing.
And within that space of time, we saw so many changes. I mean, I'm not going to say it caused depression or because it didn't, but it certainly took her away from doing good things that you should be doing as a child, playing, exercising with. It's simply just interacting with your siblings. I mean, that is a precious part of childhood. If it's spent doing other things, i.e. scrolling, if you're busy on Instagram looking at doctored photos of other girls who are just looking their very best every day and living their very best life and influencers who are spending their times on sunny beaches, and suddenly you're feeling inadequate because you live this ho-hum existence. I mean, as a 12-year-old, how do you process all of that?
Well, you can't.
Many adults can't. So what I was saying is that I'm not surprised that the science is going to be coming in, as you say, shortly. But in the last however many years, we parents can see it, can feel it. We didn't need to wait for the scientific literature to say this is not good for my child.
No, I know. I don't think you should wait at all. I think you're absolutely right. But in terms of the fight, because 90, so this is the statistic that might alarm you. Only 3% of parents think anything is happening to their children. So, and you're in that 3%. 90% of 12-year-olds are seeing sexual content in Australia, which is why we're the leading country and being targeted by criminal gangs around the world. And you cannot get anyone to join in this outrageous activity that's happening. I know people that have been talking to government for 7 years.
We can't get a simple age verification happening. Unfortunately, the Australian government was looking into this very question. If you're referring now, if we're honing in on sexualized content online, and the government just early this year said, "Oh, we'll need to look into it a bit more," and the urgency of the issue is just can't afford for us to, sit back and look into it a bit more.
And I get a lot of pushback because older parents are just happy that their children aren't having to deal with this, and I'm thinking, but their kids might have children, and it'll be 100 yep. times worse unless we do something.
Yeah, and the only thing we can do in the meantime, because look, the science moves slowly, laws move even slower.
Right.
So the only thing we can do in the meantime, as private citizens, as parents, is to say, well, I don't need necessarily to wait for my government to tell me that this is bad for my children. I can see it. There is enough anecdotal evidence. There is enough scientific evidence coming out now to validate what I feel in my gut, and I'm going to do something about it. And that something is to reach out to other parents and families in your local community and to try to create local alliances so that you can take this path together. It's easier on your children, and it's easier on you as parents, knowing that you're not the only mean parents in town, right?
Yeah.
So it's the only solution, immediate solution that we think you know, doesn't cost money, doesn't take a whole lot of resources. It just requires people to start talking to each other, recognizing that it's a problem for all of us. So we're all in it together, and we can also help each other together. And so that's the model that we've instituted here in our little community in Sydney, and that we're hoping other people would look at that and say, hey, I can do the same thing as well.
Yeah. And what about people that want to set up something similar somewhere else? How do they go about doing that?
They don't need licensing from me or anybody else. It requires them to just pick up the phone, maybe even use WhatsApp, because I think nearly every school grade in every school in the country has a WhatsApp chat. It just requires one parent to say, hey, are you struggling with screens and social media in your house like I am? And the response will be, just like the response was for my wife and I, yes, because we're all struggling through it. And then the conversation starts. Well, hey, how about we discuss the possibility of banding together and not giving our children smartphones and social media until, you know, a certain age. Now, we say the earlier you can have that conversation, the better. Don't wait until the kids are in high school, because by then they've all got it and it's very hard to take it off them. But if you have that conversation when the kids are in year 3 or year 4 or even year 2 and even earlier, there's no harm, and create that community nice and early, so that as your children progress through school, they know that in this community or in this school, there is a good sizable minority, or hopefully even a majority, that have said no to smartphones and no to social media. And one thing that we do in our own little local alliance here in Kingsgrove is that every now and then we will get together and go for a hike in the local bushland, or do something that gets the kids outside, which is the other side of the coin of what we're trying to do, which is, it's not just a negative mission. It's not just saying no to smartphones, no to, it's also saying yes to childhood, yes to life. So, and that's a good way of making those connections and knowing that there are other people in your community who are walking, you know, this path with you.
No, that's such a great idea, and I agree with that. And building community to protect each other, because we're losing that as well. So it's bringing that back into, you know, and kids have lots of different options for different friendship groups too that are maybe outside school as well. So there's so many great things that you mentioned there that people can really benefit from. It's not easy to do when we've got such a busy life now, with both parents having to work and just putting food on the table. You know, these are challenges for all, you know, and it should, like, my biggest thing is, I don't think it should be on parents to have to deal with this myself personally, but the truth is we have to, because no one else is. And that's kind of where I was like, I need to activate the parent network too, just like you, because it is the only safeguard for children right now in 2024. And I'm so grateful that you're out there trying to do that as well. And it'd be wonderful to join all of us together in one network, just like all of the, that's how the other networks work that are getting to our children. They work together. They don't work solo. They're actually feeding information back and forth. Some missing piece that most parents won't be aware of, the reason they're targeting our children online at exponential rates is because to stay in their network, they have to upload new child material every month.
Right, yeah.
And this is something we're not doing. We don't help each other. We work with on our own, do you know what I mean, in our own little households, our own little groups.
We know exactly what you mean. And this is precisely why the Heads Up Alliance exists, is so that parents don't feel that they're the only ones doing this, and because the kids quickly, you know, the first retort is you're you know, no one else, you're the only parents who have these rules, and we're so isolated, but this is to try to break those, mm-hmm. to break that whole way of thinking, which is, no, we're not isolated, we're in this together. This is something that touches every single family in the country.
It is. And it's even more than you realize. Like, I don't know if you're getting people reaching out to you on the quiet
We do. We get people reaching out to us all the time. And it's not a surprise. And in fact, you know, we don't, my wife and I are, you know, we do our very best, but this requires ultimately government help. Just, as you mentioned, just like we brought in campaigns to remove cigarettes from the hands of children, eventually, I believe that we will look at handing a smartphone to a child in much the same way as you would handing them a packet of cigarettes. But until that day, we can't afford 10
Wait.
years of inaction or 20 years of inaction.
I'm with you, Danny, and I'm here as a neuroscience support to you and all your work any way we can, and to tell you that from a brain and child development point of view, the evidence is becoming very clear that it is the same as smoking a cigarette, and you would never let your 5-year-old, or especially your 18-month-old in a pram, have a cigarette.
No.
And what we're seeing, all you need to do is walk in the park or go to a restaurant and observe what's happening.
Yeah, it's quite tragic, actually. It really is. And the if this continues unfettered, then you would hate to think what consequences are down the line for us as a society. I think the more we can amplify voices such as yours, and the sooner we can do it, the better. Because you know, we're beginning to learn. As I said to you, at the when my daughter was only a baby and the iPads were just becoming, you know, the new thing, we all rushed to them, thinking these apps where they can, you know, tap away and learn how to count and whatever is the, you know, the bee's knees. But it turns out, in fact, nothing beats just old-fashioned play and old-fashioned crayons
And reading the books.
and reading. Just, you know,
Well,
the
definitely playing in the trees and outside is
and playing in the dirt, all
hugely
outside and
beneficial.
tested stuff. Yep.
So
But
thank you, Danny, I know that you've given me a lot of your time. I'm really looking forward to working further with you, amplifying your message, helping us get this idea to help build communities, help parents, because it's not on the parents. And there's no way parents should go away from this feeling it's on them either. It's about just, we do this just so that you're completely aware of the facts that aren't being told
Yeah,
to
thank you
you.
so much, Lena. I'm really excited that we've connected. Hopefully, some good things that will come from that collaboration, and as we continue to reach out to other people who are very concerned as we are about what this all means for our children.
Yes, and I remember you talking with Alistair, and he put forward on your on the other podcast you're on, Comical, he put forward some great strategies that I think would be valuable for us to think about too, around building the scientific base, but the white paper where it becomes undeniable facts, like just like you managed to some with other people willing the willingness of others to. Like you did manage to get smartphones banned from school, and most people that thought that would be an impossible task, I would have thought at the beginning.
Yeah, we're not going to take full credit for that. There are a lot of people involved. Certainly, we played a role. And you've mentioned something. We're now going to be targeting Catholic schools around the country because we don't think it's fair that there's an entire system of schooling that is missing out on these new rules that are in place now for public schools. So, if you send your kids to a Catholic school, we're coming soon.
And how are you doing that? Are you able to share?
Well, I'll try not to take too much more of your time, but
Yeah.
last year we worked with our local Catholic school system, Sydney Catholic Schools. It took 12 months of conversations and letter writing and meetings and being a little bit of a pest. And eventually they instituted a phone ban in their schooling system. So they administer about 150 schools in the Sydney area. So it just requires conversations with people, and we're hoping that we can build on that and reach out to other school systems, other Catholic school systems. In fact, we're hoping just to go straight to the top and go to the National Catholic Education Commission, I think they're called, and see what they can do to institute those phone bans, because we believe now that Catholic school students are behind the eight ball, given that most private schools and all public schools have banned phones from 9 to 3. We think that there is space there for Catholic schools to do much better than they are presently doing.
Okay, yeah, I think that's the case here too. It's not just Catholic schools. I think it's all independent schools, isn't it, up here too, that still allow smartphones. And the thing that's quite frightening, as I live near sporting sheds where I see kids being targeted, both offline, you know, in the offline space from being in the online space, if you know what I mean, because they're so wealthy and have access to cash. And these kids are the ones being sextorted financially. It's a bit
now taking phones out of schools isn't going to solve that problem, however, because a lot of that stuff, as you said, happens in bedrooms at night. And that's where parents are going to have to step up their game.
It's frightening, actually, when you learn about exactly what's really going on out there. It's not fun, that's for sure. And I wish I didn't know about it now, to be honest, but I have. But once you know, you've got to do something.
Yeah,
right?
You can't unknow.
You can't unknow.
And it affects children, right? So you really can't unknow.
Yes, exactly. And that's why we've got to try and get, it just takes a while to really let it takes a while to sink in, because it's so, it shuts down your brain because it's so horrendous what's really going on. And so you don't want to believe it's your child. And I completely can relate to that. But once it does sink in, and then you recognize, as the leading expert says, just accept the fact that it could be and most likely is your child at some level, because 90% of all children are seeing something online they shouldn't be seeing. And then you just put in all the protective factors by starting to see what they're really seeing, starting to see who they're really talking to, see how many contacts they have, see what's actually happening, then that allows you to make them safe, is what he said to me, even if they're not being targeted.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, thank you, Danny, for your time. I look forward to working with you and getting this message out further. I'd like to see more of the community approach being implemented up here. I'd like to learn from you how we can do that more effectively up here in Brisbane as well. And I look forward to how we can bring that up to Queensland independent schools too, if you have time or energy to share some of that strategy.
Absolutely, Selena. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and it's been a pleasure talking.
Thank you.
Bye now.